Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Africa Straight Talk. We are your weekly podcast that brings you interviews and discussions of matters of the African continent in a very unique, straightforward, and unapologetic way. My name is Edwin Okongo. I am immeasurably thankful that you continue to support our growing podcast, supporting your African media, especially now that Twitter is banned in Nigeria, which we shall be talking about. My co-host is my friend and award-winning Ivorian journalist and broadcaster, Mr. Emmanuel Nado. Jumbo, Baba.
Jumbo, Baba Nani. Wow, I haven't heard this Jumbo. It was a very popular song.
Jumbo, Bwana, Habari Gani. Yeah, so that's a classic from East Africa, you know, Kenya, Jumbo.
Sana.
Wageni, mwakaribishwa, Kenya yetu, hakuna matata.
Yeah, matata,
yeah,
that one.
So basically what the song is saying, you know, hello, how you doing today? Welcome to Kenya.
Yeah.
In our country, there is no trouble. It's all rosy. It's all
rosy.
Yeah, it's all rosy. It's all hakuna matata. There are no problems.
I remember back in Ivory Coast, there was a radio host. He had a show, an early morning show. And he used to call it the Jumbo.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So,
Jumbo. It means that people are getting up and going to work.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's early morning Jumbo. That's the what's up in East Africa. And didn't Lionel Richie have a song? Oh, Jumbo nipe sentimo.
Yeah. Yeah.
Remember?
Dancing on the ceiling.
Yeah.
Dancing.
Yeah. So Jumbo, what a wonderful phrase.
I don't know who taught Lionel Richie that line.
Oh, it's probably someone. You know, I have been asked to go to Hollywood and help with, you know, some movie script writers with Swahili.
You would have become millionaire by now.
I don't think so, because they did not want to pay me. Well, they wanted to fly me out there to be part of the process, but they didn't want to pay me. I just say, screw you. I should have just gone there, now that I think about it, and, you know, translate. Maybe it would have led to something else.
You know what? There was an issue about that, about using the right native to do the voiceover.
And not giving him credit, right?
And not only that, but they strongly opposed to that. And they were using American voiceover and teaching them how to say the thing. Mm-hmm. And the person will, do the voiceover in that language, but it's not correct.
Oh, it is. I mean, they do it over and over again. And I saw what movie did I see? There was a movie, I think it was Nowhere in Africa. And I just watched it, and I was just kept getting mad, because they are in the Rift Valley, and the language they are speaking there is spoken in the western part of the country, right? Like, wow, why are you speaking the Luo language in the Rift Valley? because probably they found somebody to teach them Luo and whatever. Or, I mean, like, why not even, I guess they wanted to impress that not only Swahili is spoken in Africa,
they do have a lot of this problem, especially in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, when they have these American movies, that black American movie that they are trying to duplicate, in Europe to do voiceover, they use the white person to do a voiceover, to do a voice of Eddie Murphy.
Yeah.
It doesn't even sound like a black person talking.
Well, that's why it's called acting. I guess you don't have to be black. You don't have to be white.
But no, it takes away something. Takes something away from the whole movie itself.
I know. I mean, these guys who are calling me to LA, like, could you come be part of this? If they had said, okay, yeah, we're going to fly you down here, put you up in a hotel and pay you $1,000. $1,000, which is, I would have been like, okay, and we'll give you credit on a movie as, whatever. But they don't want to do that. And I think what they're afraid of is that you're going to find something wrong with the story structure. So they're like, oh, you come here and teach this Swahili phrases and get out and not be involved in the process.
Exactly. You
know, that's
teach
all they
to
want.
The white person, mm-hmm. and the white person going to say.
Going to say.
You see that?
And then the white person speaks Swahili on Yoruba or Wolof in the movie. And then we're like, oh my God, a white person speaking Swahili. What a wonderful white person. You know? Meanwhile, here we are speaking between 17 languages. And no one is praising us. And we speak them very well, the European languages especially.
Of course. Of course. That's our advantage. They came over, they did all this mess, and they gave all their languages, and we know their language. They don't know our language.
No, they don't have to. They don't have to. Because you, to get out of Africa, you have to know that language, but they do not have to learn, you know, African to come to Kenya. You know, they don't have to, which is why, you know, when I was teaching Swahili at Berkeley, it was like, who takes Swahili? You know, like you and very few of my students would think, especially my white students, like, oh, we're going to Africa, we should learn this language, right?
So they
were just like, oh, they speak English. If they don't speak English, we'll find someone who does and to do the translation.
And then when they get there, and then you are there with friends or whatever, and you guys are speaking your language, they get upset.
Oh, yeah, they get upset.
Because they don't understand it.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is why I respect, there was a boxer from Mexico, Julio Chavez?
Yeah, Julio Chavez.
Chavez. I loved him because he spoke English, but he did interviews in Spanish. Like, hey, you don't speak Spanish, don't fucking talk to me. You know, learn my language.
Well, I didn't know that. That's great.
Yeah, he did most of his, he did interviews in Spanish, even though he was fluent
in English,
you know, and I think he might have grown up in the US, but he spoke English, but he said, hey, you want to talk to me? And we should do that more. It's like, hey, let them, you know, I want to see, do you know any white kids named Mandela?
No. No.
But do you know any kids named Kennedy?
It would be awkward.
Do you know any black kids named Kennedy? A lot of them.
Many
of them.
A lot of them.
Wait, I even knew a kid named Kissinger, Henry Kissinger.
Oh, yes. Many
of them. So why is it? Yeah. So we look, that's why they don't bother to learn. It's like, you'll stand over here and talk about your love, the Mandela and all this. And you're like, okay, I would like to see a white kid named Mandela. Mandela. Huh? Yeah. Where's Mandela?
That is why when Mobutu took over the control of his country, Zaire, Congo, he changed the name to Zaire. And he told people to go back to their roots and get there.
Well,
so everybody's got rid of all their European names and then start using long Congolese names.
Yeah, that cannot erase the fact that he killed Lumumba.
Oh, yeah.
He just did that. It was like, you know, remember we had Professor Mchombo here from Berkeley, the Malawian professor. Mm-hmm. He talked about how conflicting, what was the first president of the country?
Which country?
Malawi, the first president of his country
You mean, what's his name? Julius Nyerere?
No, Malawi, no. Malawi, south of.
Oh, Malawi.
Okay, I'm going to kill myself for not remembering it. But anyway, I will remember. So he came here in, the first president of Malawi, and he was...
Kamuzu Banda?
That's him. Kamuzu Banda.
Yeah, it sounds familiar.
Mchombo is going to kill me for not remembering. So Kamuzu Banda, he was like the most like Eurocentric guy. Like he just like spoke, you know, perfect English. His first name was Hastings. Yeah.
Hastings.
So he was Hastings Kamuzu Banda. So he dropped that. Now he's Kamuzu Banda. And then, you know, promoting the language. You remember how Mchombo told him, like, that's how he got in the country, because Mchombo wanted to do sciences, but he got called by the president. I want you to be, because he was good at sciences, I want you to take on, you know, this Africanization of our culture through language and teaching Chichewa. So you have those conflict people who have feet in both worlds. And
yeah, the professor was a very interesting guest.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, now, let's talk about another professor who has been very prominent. We're talking about this, the Professor Achille Mbembe.
Oh, yes. The Cameroonian professor who has been he has been a fierce critic of France and its condensing relationship with Africa, with the France-Afrique.
Yeah, well, he's now under fierce criticism himself for accepting an invitation by French President Emmanuel Macron to lead preparation for the 29th annual Africa-France Summit, which will take place in October in Montpellier. Some of his critics include Senegalese author Boubacar Boris Diop, who called Mbembe's flirting with the former colonial masters a bad joke. What do you think happened to this guy? I mean, this is the guy who not very long ago was describing Macron as someone who lacks imagination.
I think age makes a difference.
What do you mean?
The guy is 63 years old.
That's not old.
And I guess he's getting old, he's getting senile.
Mm.
Because the new generation of Africa, 40, from 30 all the way going up, mm-hmm. I mean, even from 20s,
mm-hmm.
they are the one that are really focusing on the way this France-Afrique is treating the rest of the continent,
mm-hmm.
the French-speaking countries. So I think for this guy to accept and relax his criticism, I think he probably has drink of some Macron's Kool-Aid.
What is the one drink in France that everybody drinks?
Oh, maybe cognac.
You think they would give him expensive cognac? That's probably what they give him.
Yeah. That's probably
what they gave him. But if you really think about it, alcohol is how we got colonized.
That's true.
We're just like, you are drinking your apetishi and your banana rum, and someone comes over and like with this crystal clear Bacardi. No, I don't know if it was Bacardi, like rum. So there's like this rum made of cane from the Caribbean. And it's like, wow, you should accept this. And they drunk and they sold the continent to the white man.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that by now, many believe that the time has come to end this type of attitude and invest in institution rather than continue to think that only France can maintain stability and security. I mean, he knows that because this guy, the professor Mbembe, has gone through many universities, to many meetings and talk about that. And he have conferences with young people, and they have really expressed the opposition to this France-Afrique and the French CFA. He knows that.
Well, but these young people don't want to sit down with Macron, do they?
And no, they do not.
Yeah. So are you suggesting maybe that he is seeing them taking away the spotlight from him, and he wants to like now go roll in the hay with the in Montpellier? Oh, I'm trying to rhyme there.
Yeah.
In Montpellier.
Montpellier. That's where the conference is going to take
Montpellier.
Place.
Yeah. And now he wants to just do something to kind of like outperform them,
Yeah. And I think the advice that many people have, give it him is that he would have been better placed to advise his own people about how to deal with post-colonial rather than the master of post-colonialism himself. That's most of his critics, African scholars too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It also brings into questions, and I think you've touched on that a little bit, whether this professor, because we have always trusted these people with PhDs to be the leaders, right? In the same way in America, they are like, lawyers are going to be in Congress and they're going to fix everything because they know the Constitution. Bullshit.
Yeah, bullshit.
I think in Africa, we are about the PhDs and the professors. You think that they're the most educated people and are going to guide us. But when most of these professors do, if they are not in science or anything, they're really sitting that little cubicle at their university office, just writing a paper or two a day, I mean, a year that has like 49 words, headline, and just like nobody, that it's so not badly written, but written in a language that only people with PhDs can understand. And they go present him at these events and conferences. And we're like, oh, Professor Mbembe has spoken. He's got this.
Yeah.
And they do nothing else. Eh?
And then, isn't it become the house slaves? Because he's going to become the house slave, the one that live in the house. Because you know, he's been going around around the continent. Like he traveled to a dozen African countries to start the year to meet and speak and line up a debate. You know, to convince people that this is a good thing.
Oh yeah, that so they should. He has basically becomes the French ambassador to Africa, right? he's the French ambassador to the AU, and he's going around and just trying to line up people for the conference, and he wants it to be successful. Now, here's what he says. He responded to his criticism, and
what did he say?
Here's what he said: the time has come to end this type of attitude and invest in institutions rather than continuing to think that only strong men can maintain stability and security. So you don't believe him?
No, I don't believe him. I think the French president, he is having a lot of problem in France. Mm-hmm. An election is coming soon, next year, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
And he's trying to get some traction. And the thing is that in many of the former colonies, the countries in West Africa, they are all against what France's behavior, France's support of for dictators, and France's support of, I mean, listen, they've been in Mali now for 20 years, 5,000 troops there, and they haven't been able to do anything to those jihadists, and they're still there. So many, many, many youth now in the continent, they just don't want anything to do with France. So now for him to have some kind of traction and save his face, he's putting together this conference.
Well, it's interesting.
So he needs somebody to validate.
It is interesting that they're taking approach, but because normally, well, they most likely have all the strong men that Mbembe talks about. They probably have them in their pockets, right?
Yeah.
So they were trying to get people from the so-called civil society, the leaders who are non-governmental leaders, into their pockets, which is why I believe and of course he is, somebody's going to pay for him traveling. He's not doing this on his professor salary, is he?
No, exactly.
So you have a point. Someone is paying him. And it's also interesting that you talk about what the French have failed to do in Mali, but here they are, they have offered Mozambique, help with fighting the insurgency that is happening there now,
Exactly.
So you think this is all for show?
That, it's like, all right. So right now there's a fight going on between Chad and the Central African Republic, because the Central African Republic new leader decided to scrape this relation with France, bringing in the Russian. It's bringing in the Russian military to help him fight the rebel who are taken to overthrow him.
Well, he's probably doing that because the Russians don't give a fuck. They will just and burn everything down,
But the thing is that what the African analysts have said is that France is actually helping those rebels in Central Africa because they want to get rid of that president, the new president in Central African Republic, because he wants to get rid of all this French connection and the CFA and change everything. So all of a sudden, there's the fight between the Chadian and the Central African Republic army.
And then Macron has also acknowledged France's complicity in the 1994 genocide, which killed nearly a million people there. Thing was like the French knew about it and did nothing. They found out about it earlier than anybody that this was going to happen, and they just like looked the other way. So, he has acknowledge that he was in Rwanda.
Rwanda, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And he is...
A country that has stopped using the French as the main language too, you know?
Oh, yeah. I see what you mean. So it's all about French interests, nothing else.
Yeah, he's trying to get back his... how do you call that again? We call it toison. It's like the fleece coat. French is trying to get a fleece coat.
What kind of coat is that?
Fleece.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, like a jacket.
Like a jacket.
Oh, like to keep warm. Oh, the fleece. Yeah. Yeah, okay. Okay, that's the same.
To get warm toward this Rwanda, mm-hmm. because Rwanda, the president of Rwanda, mm-hmm. he refused to have any kind of... deal with friends, because they built the whole country after the war. They built it without no money from anybody. Mm. You know that?
I wonder, like, why is he? Are they going to pay reparations to Rwanda? Because that's what I would have asked him.
I don't know.
I would have just say, you know what? I need you to pay for what your complacency cost our country. All right? That would have been reasonable, right?
You are listening to Africa Straight Talk. Exactly. You should say that, because what's happened, I mean, they recognized it a long time ago, many years ago, mm-hmm. but they didn't want to say it in. After how many presidents that have been there now, mm-hmm. they haven't said anything about it. Mm-hmm. And Macron now, like I say, he's trying to save face, because he's in deep problem. Election is coming. He need to do something so that he can have a popularity in some other places.
Yeah, and I think that something should be reparation, because recent Germany finally paid Namibia $1.3 billion in reparation for the genocide of the Herero, right?
Yeah.
That were 10,000 people, you know, conservatively speaking, and I think we mm-hmm. covered this in an earlier episode last year, mm-hmm. were killed by Germans, right? So why can't... So that was 10,000 people. Now here you have 800,000 people in Rwanda dead.
Almost a million.
And words, are you, what you going to just give? And it's like, what is Kagame doing here? You know,
if I, like you said, mm-hmm. if I were Kagame, I would say, okay, pay up. Mm-hmm. There's a million people.
Yeah.
You want to give 1 million for each person? That would be great.
That would be great.
That would be great.
Well, although countries like Ivory Coast and the 14 Francophone countries might end up paying for it, which is basically, you know, why he should. That $500 billion you pay France every year
to the French government.
To the French government.
Yeah. So give that money back.
Yeah. As critical as we are of the West of exploiting Africa, we are the ones who allow them to. Like, we are, I mean, talk about being, you know, like no ideas, no creativity in terms of foreign policy. We are not. Yeah. We're just sitting there to be told what to do. God help us. If God, if our God wasn't the white man's God, I would have been like, God help us. But he's not going to help us.
Yeah. Like Bob Marley said, God comes black too.
Does it really?
Bob Marley said that one day in the interview.
Yeah.
He said, what kind of God is that?
Yeah.
God comes black too.
I don't know, man. I don't know. Let's go to Nigeria now.
Buhari. What's going on?
The Federal Ministry of Information and Culture wants you to know the president of Muhammadu Buhari has more power than the American wannabe dictator, Donald Trump. The failed wannabe dictator, I should add. After Twitter deleted tweets from Buhari, which the American company says violate its abusive behavior policy, the ministry announced that Twitter is now indefinitely banned in Nigeria. They announced it on Twitter. The Nigerian government announced it on Twitter.
On a Twitter, yeah.
They did not announce it on the African, whatever Nigerian social media.
Nigerian Twitter, no, yeah.
Uh-huh. Nigerian, they have Twitter. Invented, you know, what is
this social... is how ironic this is.
But never mind that. They are now threatening to arrest and prosecute any Nigerian who tweets.
From what place? I mean, there are country, neighboring country, people can tweet there. They can
From Nigeria. They can.
Yeah.
Well, I guess if you are Nigerian, if you're, I don't know if that covers our friends here in the diaspora. You know, it's like if you use Twitter in America and you're Nigerian, you could be, when you go home, you could be arrested.
So let's look at
I don't know
this.
If that covers.
It is so stupid that communique because. Okay, you ban Twitter, okay? But then you are saying any Nigerian that tweet, where are they going to tweet from? If it's banned already, why you say that?
Well, I don't think they know how to turn it off. Maybe they do.
You mean the government of Nigeria doesn't know how to turn off the Twitter?
I don't know. Because
that's true.
Because that's what they would have done. Like, I wouldn't have tweeted. I would have just gone to that switch. Right? And just turn it off. All of a sudden, Twitter is not Nigeria. What's happening? You know? But they had to tweet about it, which makes me think that they are not capable of shutting it down.
Oh, shutting down.
So, which is why they are threatening to arrest anyone who tweets. So,
the problem, Buhari is the only one that's having a problem with the Twitter.
But he wants to punish Twitter because, you know, these social media companies make money from advertising. If you're in Nigeria, you're using Twitter, you're going to see, you know, an ad about buying Dangote cement. You know?
Cement, exactly.
and pays Twitter, you know.
Yeah. a lot of the companies in Nigeria also, you know, putting an advertisement on the Twitter.
So that's what they want to punish Twitter, and they want them to use revenue, to lose all this advertising revenue, and they want to do it at the expense of Nigerian.
Twitter's revenue is probably more than the Nigeria's government budget because they're stealing all the money anyway.
Of course, Twitter is worth more than Nigeria on paper, I think.
I know.
So this is not really going to punish Twitter in any way. I mean, whatever, you know, Twitter will find the money. This is just a drop in the bucket, but it's unfair because it punishes the Nigerians who want to tweet about important things that they are doing. A lot of them, non-profit organizations who are doing the work that the Nigerian government has failed to do. A lot of entrepreneurs who've created their own jobs relying on Twitter to advertise, right, and make money. So that is completely wrong.
Yeah. And it's not really wrong, but it's stupid.
Well, it is. It is stupid. It's wrong and stupid, really. Like, I mean, you're punishing the wrong people. Again, you're not. I mean, this is like me saying, you know what? I'm not going to buy an iPhone.
Yeah.
Right?
You
just me.
It's him. Buhari is the one that say, "Okay, I'm not going to be on Twitter anymore."
That's what you should. But one of the things is like, if I say I'm not going to buy an iPhone, just me, Edwin Okongo. Mm-hmm. You think Apple is going to care about that?
Exactly.
Right? But if I say that, and my daughter and my wife and my family and I say like anyone I know who buys an iPhone is an enemy of me, right?
Yeah.
So I'm punishing my wife who loves iPhone, for example. You know?
But guess what, though?
Because of my...
How are they going to find out who tweet?
Well, my guess is that they're going to go for the prominent people. You know, they're not going for, like, if you are in a little village in a Imo state, you know.
Yeah.
They're going to target that. And then also the tweet that was controversial was it threatening the activists who are calling for the cessation of the Biafran region.
Oh, the Biafran,
which you might remember when, you know, the Biafran war
in the 60s.
Yeah,
which
was like one of the worst in Nigerian history, you know. So that's who they are going to be targeting, the people who are against them, right?
Mm.
That's who they're going to be targeting. Right? And so they'll go to the prominent people and picking them up, right? You tweeted, right? But let's look at the tweet itself. So we have said where Nigeria was wrong for banning Twitter. But let's look at where Twitter was wrong for banning, for censoring Buhari. So here's the tweet that it read, "Those of us in the fields for 30 months who went through the war, the Biafran war, will treat them, you know, the secessionists, in the language they understand." That's the tweet that was removed. That's one of the tweets that was removed.
Well, that I don't understand why Twitter will remove that, something like that.
How different?
It doesn't have any threat like, you know, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to take this. I'm going to kill you. I'm going to do this.
Well, here is this is the commander in chief of the Nigerian armed forces talking here. Can we compare that with the commander in chief of the United States? Have they said anything similar to that or even worse? Haven't they?
Okay.
No, serious. I mean, think about.
So now this fear, let's figure out. They're going to treat the secessionists in the language they understand.
Mm-hmm. Which is violence, of course.
But that's a violence and military things like that. Okay. How come all this time Buhari's army have not been able to get rid of these Boko Haram?
Well, Nado, I want us to focus here on the Twitter now.
Okay. All right.
Buhari, we could go for the whole show. But I want to talk about the USA, you know, a U.S. company censoring a Nigerian, an African head of state, African commander-in-chief of the armed forces of his country. And just because something he used that, he said
it's something that they know about because they have the history.
Yeah, but let's look at Bush. What did he say about Al Qaeda and when they were gone?
He said we're gonna push them,
smoke
we're
them out of those out, caves,
wherever they are.
Smoke them in back into those caves. Obama, he got Bin Laden, but they every time you know you've heard so many American leaders say that we're going to deal. We will find you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when they say we will find you, what they mean? We're going to make love to you.
Exactly.
They mean that we're going to kill you, right?
We're going to kill you.
And they tweet about this thing, yet I've never heard any American president
being removed on a
being
Twitter.
Forced to, you know, his Twitter being deleted because he threatened other people with violence. Right?
Well, they did Trump, finally.
Well, at least. They removed Trump because of what Trump did on June 6th. Trump had said so many, many things. Right?
You mean January 6th?
No, on January 6th, yeah. So that insurgency, they call it. Even so that's what did it for them, right?
Exactly.
So they rarely delete. I don't know if they ever deleted any of his tweets. They marked them. They flagged them, right? And they put, they are false. They are whatever the hell, you know? But what I'm saying is, how come an American president can stand up here and say, we will find you and we will kill you to the people who are against them, against America, who threaten America.
Buhari
cannot say that.
They don't get banned.
So I think we have to, I mean, I hate to defend someone who, like the Nigerian president or any African president. I hate to. But as an advocate of free speech, on this one, I'm siding with Buhari.
It's a double standard.
It's a double standard. I'm siding with Buhari saying that his tweets should not have been deleted, not that he should have banned Twitter. Want to make that clear?
And it's not a strong language anyway.
It's not.
You know, if just saying that because they went through the war, that Biafra war, which was really devastating to the country. And they just don't want to get back to that situation.
Well, what you think, I have a lot of friends from the area, most the Igbo friends. They were like the Igbo, and they know that I would never, ever stand for what happened in that war, right? So that's not what we are arguing here, but what we're arguing is the semantics of the language. We are explaining the severity of the language Buhari used here, right? Yeah. And how different or not it is from the statements regarding insurgency that the leaders of the country where Twitter was founded and is based have made and continue to make. Right now, if there's a terrorist attack, I can guarantee you Joe Biden is going to stand up and say that we will find you.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Remember the time of Bin Laden, and he would get on a video, mm-hmm. we record a video mm-hmm. where he would talk about how he's going to come and kill America and things like that.
Yeah.
And they never banned him on YouTube.
They did delete a lot of accounts from the terrorist organizations.
After the fait accompli.
Yeah, but the thing, after people have complained. And in this one, Nigerians did complain, right? So Nigerians did complain, but I'm saying that this is not language that you would consider. It is a factual language, right?
Yeah.
Because according to the government, there's a secessionist are blowing up government buildings. We don't know if that's true, if it's them doing that. But if that's the case, then I think as the commander-in-chief of the armed forces, that's not an explicit statement to make. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, right. It is a warning.
Wait, I'm not saying he should go, and I want to, because Africans have this tendency, like they don't analyze things critically. So you're going to hear someone say that I have said that it's okay for Buhari to treat secessionists in the language they understand.
Yeah,
that's not what I'm saying. Let me repeat that.
Your argument is the double standard from the tweet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're also saying that this tweet wasn't like the worst an African president are saying. I could go through Twitter and see things. I mean, the president of my own country, when in 2017 the Supreme Court reversed the elections, the results mm-hmm. of the election, and they said, you got to do over. The president and his people were tweeting and talking about, we are going to deal with them, right?
Yeah.
So
how
different is that? You know, how are they going to deal with them?
And
cannot say that they didn't mean they were going to deal with them with the violence, because I think if they had lost the second time, that would have been violence.
Hmm? But it was summoned to the international court, huh?
Yeah, I mean, that was, they were all thrown away because people weren't.
Yeah, they were thrown away, there were no proof.
Yeah, nobody wanted to testify.
Advocating violence.
But what I'm just saying is that we have to be very critical. Twitter should not just remove people or delete tweets just because they have been reported. It just reminds me of those, like the our, you know, terrestrial radio show. You know how many people it needs to, for the FCC, the Federal Communication, to fine you on our radio on KLW if we did something. Huh? Like 200 people have to report and say there was some indecency out of a country of 300 million. 200 people say that you said something indecent.
Yeah,
you're going to be investigated by the FCC. Right. So we don't want to get into a point where we are attacking people because someone complained. Let's look critically at this, understand the history and look at other issues, other comparable cases before we say, you know what, this Buhari tweet violates behavior, you know, abusive behavior. Right?
The thing is that who even the majority of us don't know what a Twitter's procedure or in terms of a policy.
Well, that doesn't
what is considered.
I mean, that's all debatable, which is why I think it's one of those things like, you know, ban first and then let's discuss
and try it. To figure out.
Yeah, but if this is the tweet, I don't know if there were other tweets. I haven't seen it. If this is the tweet that did it. Well, Twitter needs to do better. That's all I'm saying. They need to do better.
We've seen many
Africa Straight Talk is presented by me, Edwin Okongo, along with my co-host, the veteran Ivorian journalist and broadcaster, Mr. Emmanuel Nador. The South African poet and community organizer, Teboho, is our contributing host, and Kenyan-born Haboshi Imbukwa is our extraordinary producer. Find more episodes on our website, www.africastraighttalk.com. You can also find us whenever you find your podcast on Apple, Google, Spotify, anywhere. We are all over those platforms. We are also on Twitter, if we don't get banned for whatever, for criticizing Twitter in this episode, at Africans Talk. And you can follow us on Facebook and Instagram by searching Africa Straight Talk. And of course, don't forget to tell your friends about us. To become a sponsor of our growing podcast, email us africastraighttalk@gmail.com. Until next time, Mzee Nado.
Be well, safe, wear your mask at all times according to your state or city's public guidelines, and love one another.